Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots with Mary Jo Fahey. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Very well, Hercules. Excellent. It was a beautiful fall day here in Manhattan, and I'm very much looking forward to Mary Jo's report. As always, she's done it again. Wait till you hear what she's got.
I'm greatly looking forward to it. Hi, Mary Jo. Welcome.
Hi, Hercules.
I'll be here if you guys need me.
Excellent. Okay, then here we go. This program is Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots. I'm Nick Curto, your co-host, along with...
I'm Mary Jo Fahey, your other co-host. Together, Nick and I founded Disclosure Network New York, and DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th year of providing two meetings a month throughout the year. We have had to stop our meetings in person, face-to-face in Manhattan, since the venue we had been using is closed due to COVID-19. Until the venue reopens, we now produce all of our meetings on Zoom for our supportive DNNY members.
Our Zoom meetings are held on the first and the third Wednesday nights from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time each month throughout 2021, and it looks like it's going to go beyond that. If you would like to have details to become a supportive DNNY member, please email me and I'll give you that information. My email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, but the numeral 1, at gmail.com. Once again, nicknyny1 at gmail.com.
Our motto right from day one is connecting the dots to seek truth. We focus on cutting-edge UFO, ET issues, paranormal phenomena, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of areas and sources, going deep into these exciting and sometimes misunderstood areas that the mainstream corporate press will very seldom talk about or disclose. In other words, who or what is behind the curtain?
Our members do intensive, investigative, deep research into these various topics and share that information with our group at our Zoom meetings twice a month and with our internet followers on YouTube. Both carry our recorded DNNY programs. It's a great way to catch up if you've missed one or more of our meetings. Also, you can visit our website. Highly recommend you do that. I'm going to give you the address to that, which is www.dnny.info. Again, dnny.info.
We also have available to our DNNY members worldwide a daily news blast email service focusing on the most important topics of special interest. By becoming a DNNY member, you will then be connected to our other members receiving cutting-edge daily news that has never been more intense than right now, plus our meeting announcement details, as well as invitations to special events year-round.
Let's get right to it. Mary Jo, please tell our listeners what tonight's program is about.
Tonight's topic is about 3D printed food. This topic is related to the topic we'll cover next month, which is benefits of ancient food sold at Whole Foods. Tonight's food has a high yuck factor, and next month we'll balance it out with healthy food that is 11,000 years old, that exists because the food has been preserved by Whole Foods, which is why I've singled them out. There's a photo of a 3D printed steak on the cover of the show notes developed by an Israeli company called Redefine Meat. Redefine Meat's 3D printed vegan steak is made from a mix of soy and pea proteins, coconut fat, and sunflower oil. The company specializes in manufacturing industrial-level 3D printers that will eventually be sold to meat distributors worldwide and become part of the meat supply chain. The steak is presently sold to customers in Israel, Germany, and Switzerland. A February 2021 article titled 3D Printed Vegan Steak Proves It's As Good As the Real Thing in Blind Taste Tests, written by writer Perry Blumberg and published on the site called The Beat, says Redefined Meat held a blind taste test for 600 people in Kedron, Israel. Perry reported that 90% of the visitors said the meat products were comparable to animal products in taste, texture, and mouthfeel. He also said Redefined Meat wants its products to be available globally in supermarkets by 2022, and they're waiting for a plant-based revolution. I placed two photos of the Redefined Meat steak in the show notes. Photo number one is the steak being assembled in a 3D printer. There are nozzles laying down fat, blood, and muscle that are labeled. Photo number two is a cooked steak that appeared in the publication called The Beat. And the photo looks quite remarkable. A February 4th, 2019 article titled A Guide to 3D Printed Food Revolution in the Kitchen, written by a writer named Carlotta V, published on a website called 3DNatives.com, says 3D printed food was developed for space travel by NASA in 2006. In 2013, NASA developed a project called Advanced Food Program in cooperation with a 3D printer company called BHEX, and together they developed a printer called Chef 3D that was able to 3D print a pizza. I added a photo of the pizza to the show notes. One of the most outrageous sections in Carlotta's article is about a food designer named Susanna Suarez who created a project called Insects au Gratin. As a substitute for meat, Susanna uses insect protein. The rationale is that insects are more environmentally friendly. They produce less methane and consume less water. I've added a photo of Susanna biting into a cookie made from insect protein into the show notes. To read the article, our listeners can Google the title that is provided in the notes. I searched for information about Susanna and found her website, SusannaSuarez.com. The site has photographs taken for her Insects au Gratin project of what looks like mathematically perfect complex shapes made of insect protein. When I
Mary Jo, I just got a comment here. Yuck. Just my comment is yuck. It's just, it's not flying for me. I don't know about our other listeners, but this is going, uh-oh, here we go.
It's really, really out there.
Yep.
Well, when I continued to search for information about insect protein, I found a large number of scientific studies as well as articles in the consumer press describing a new mealworm industry. A mealworm is the larval stage of a darkling beetle that stays in the larval stage for 1 to 2 years. Walmart sells them in 5-pound bags to customers who raise backyard chickens. In 1996, mealworms were used as a prop in Star Trek The Next Generation in an episode called Conspiracy. In the show, the mealworms are supposed to be tube grubs that are considered to be a delicacy by the Ferengi. A European Union regulation passed in 2015 has allowed mealworms to be classified as a novel human food. Several companies wanted to sell mealworms as human food, and they were given the novel food status, which allowed them to stay on the market until the European Food Safety Agency, or EFSA, ruled them as safe. And that happened in May 2021. Our FDA requires that insects for human consumption must be raised specifically for human food.
Mm.
So they allow it if the insects are raised specifically for that purpose.
Wow. Wow. Did not know that. I don't think anyone does know that.
It's amazing. The news about mealworms was thoroughly covered by the European press. I placed photos of mealworms in the show notes. One is a bowl of mealworms that appeared in an article published by The Guardian, and the other is a bowl of mealworms used as the prop on Star Trek The Next Generation. There are a lot of scientific studies about mealworms. Scientists seem to accept mealworms as food. Nearly every article has an introductory statement that says, edible insects such as the yellow mealworms are valuable alternatives to conventional meat because their nutrient content is comparable and the ecological impact of insect rearing is lower than that of traditional animal husbandry. The articles then begin to talk about food applications as though mealworms are already accepted. For example, I found a July 2020 article titled Fermentation versus Meat Preservatives to Extend the Shelf Life of Mealworm Paste for Feed and Food Applications in a journal called Frontiers in Microbiology, written by a team of scientists in Belgium. Belgium was one of the first European Union states to approve mealworms as human food even before the European Food Safety Agency. The fermentation described in the article is accomplished with genetically engineered cultures called Bactoferm and Lactobacillus fasciminus. We will be covering genetically engineered cultures in our November podcast. In 2014, 3D food designer Susanna Suarez worked on her Insects au Gratin project at London South Bank University, or LSBU. I found the school newspaper online and an article that contains quotes from Susanna's collaborator, Dr. Ken Spears, who is a food scientist at LSBU. Ken describes how the insects are processed. He says the foods are made by drying and then grinding insects into a fine powder. Mealworms have proved to be quite useful. You can get a 40 to 50% protein count. We have been turning them into flour, combining that with a fondant paste and using that in a 3D printer. I wondered what Ken meant when he said you can get 40 to 50% protein count, and I learned that the mealworm is 50% protein. The fondant paste he describes is a creamy preparation of sugar, water, and flavoring. So that's what he's talking about. That's what goes through the 3D printer. Scientists mm-hmm. around the world are experimenting with mealworm flour in bread and muffins, calling it protein fortification. For example, I found a July 2021 article titled Nutritional, Physiochemical, and Biological Value of Muffins Enriched with Edible Insects Flour, published in a journal called Antioxidants. The author said that the protein content in muffins supplemented with insect flour is increased while the carbohydrate content decreased. As I continued to research the subject of 3D printed foods, I could not stop thinking about mealworms and mealworm flour. As I've described, NASA has been 3D printing food since 2006, and I wondered if the astronauts are eating food made with mealworm flour. I Googled the question, does the International Space Station have a 3D food printer? An October 2019 article published in Business Insider was returned, titled Astronauts Just Printed Meat in Space for the First Time and It Could Change the Way We Grow Food on Earth, written by Aria Bendix. Aria reported that a company called LF Farms provided the technology to print meat in space. When I Googled the question, does LF Farms use mealworm flour, the articles returned say that LF Farms uses beef cells to 3D print a steak, but the company is also mentioned in an article about a French startup that raised $224 million to build the world's largest bug farm called Y Insect. Forbes, Fortune, and Bloomberg all published articles about the startup because Robert Downey Jr. is an investor.
Mary Jo, I gotta just ask you too about that. When you're saying this, what if we were to go to a restaurant? We wouldn't know what's in the food. What they're using.
That's right.
Who knows if they've already started doing that? They're not going to announce it. It
right.
looks to me as though you wouldn't detect that there was something that you didn't want in your food. You probably wouldn't be able to come to that conclusion one way or the other. So there's no way, I don't believe, that we would know what's in our food.
That's right. You'd have to really, really kind of, you know, investigate what, and then trust the sources who you buy products from.
No, I think the word you just used is very pivotal, trust, because trust is everything when it comes
yes.
especially to food and what we're drinking.
Yes.
You're trusting them to give you what they say it is and it, to make it as pure as possible. So, and you don't necessarily think, especially in a restaurant, of asking this particular question. I don't think anybody would really ask that question, and yet you wonder what the answer would be, or even if they would tell you if they were using a flour made with insects. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a little bit disturbing here. This is disturbing stuff.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, the article that helped me understand which large companies are 3D food printing is published in a scientific journal called Foods, titled Food Texture Design by 3D Printing, a Review. The article appeared February 3rd, 2021, written by Tatiana Pereira and two co-authors. Tatiana and her colleagues are scientists with the Marine and Environmental Sciences Center in Peniche, Portugal. They describe 3D food printing as additive manufacturing technology. Their paper is about food texture. What is surprising is their list of companies already using the technology that includes Hershey, which, of course, everybody knows makes chocolates, Barilla Pasta, Ruffles Potato Chips, Oreo Cookies, LF Farms, which I mentioned went into space, Meat Tech, Redefine Meat, which I've also mentioned, and Nova Meat. When I Google Hershey and 3D printed food with the word photo, I found an article on the Harvard Business School site published November 13, 2018, titled Taste the Future, 3D Printing Chocolate at Hershey. The writer, who is a student with the initials PZH, says he grew up watching the Jetsons and never thought food would ever be available with the press of a few buttons. There's a screenshot of Jane Jetson pressing buttons on a food machine. He or she says the 3D food printing industry is projected to reach $525 million by 2023. Hershey's
wow.
had a 3D food printer since 2014 that they named CocoJet. To read the article, our readers can Google the title, which is in the notes. When I Googled Ruffles 3D printed food, I found a newsletter titled Food Manufacturing with a page that says, unknown to most hungry snack food fans, food and beverage giant PepsiCo has been using 3D printing to help produce Ruffles potato chips since 2011. The same search returned a link to a CNN news story published December 31, 2014, written by writer Jacopo Prisco, titled Foodini Machine Lets You Print Edible Burgers, Pizza, Chocolate. The machine costs $1,000, and it is made by a Barcelona startup called Natural Machines. The article says Foodini can be useful for recipes that require precision and dexterity, like homemade pizza or filled pasta. Currently, the device only prints the food, which must then be cooked. A future model will also cook the preparation and produce it ready to eat. CEO Lynette Kuzma, who is co-founder, says there is a touch screen on the front that connects to a recipe site in the cloud, so it's an Internet of Things connected kitchen appliance. Users will also be able to control the device remotely using a smartphone and share their recipes with the community. In our April 2021 podcast about the bioprinting of body parts, I mentioned that the field of bioprinting is merging with nanotechnology. And I wondered if 3D printed food uses nanomaterial and Googled 3D printed food nanoparticles. I found a December 12, 2017 article titled 3D Printing by Using Nanoparticles to Assemble Food, published in a journal called Bold Business, written by a staff writer. The article says the 3D printing of food began almost as soon as the commercial 3D printing process was released. According to the author, the process uses nanocellulose fiber. Using fibers, the newest printers can add and bind proteins, carbohydrates, and fats to create food texture. The food can also be cooked in several different ways while it is 3D printed. To read the article, our listeners can Google the title. I wondered if the nanocellulose fiber is safe and Googled nanocellulose toxicity liver NIH. I found a paper published July 1, 2019 in a journal called Environmental Science Nano titled Toxicological Effects of Ingested Nanocellulose in In Vitro Intestinal Epithelium and In Vivo Rat Models. The authors are with the Center for Nanotechnology and Nanotoxicology, Department of Environmental Health at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston. In their paper, writer Glenn Deloitte and colleagues explain that nanocellulose has not yet been designated as safe. Cellulose is a structural component found in plants. If you recall, Redefined Meat's 3D printed vegan steak is made from a mix of soy, pea proteins, coconut fat, and sunflower oil. In our February 2020 podcast about cholesterol, I mentioned that plant protein is the least efficient form. Eggs and dairy are the most efficient. Eggs are 90% usable, dairy is 76% usable, meat, fish, and poultry are 15 to 20% usable, and plant protein is the least efficient. This refers to the essential amino acids that need to be obtained in food and cannot be manufactured by the body. I've been planning to repeat this information in the December podcast that covers problems in modern agriculture and food processing. In that show, there is a section on soy. Soy is a genetically engineered food that is supposed to contain enhanced nutrition. It is also one of the most heavily sprayed crops. The biggest problem with soy is phytates. A small amount of fermented soy, such as soy sauce, is okay, that I will explain in the next section. Phytic acid is a geeky-sounding chemical that you need to be concerned about. It is in the kernel of all grains, nuts, and seeds, which means it is in the bread, cakes, cookies, and other baked goods that you eat. Phytates are called anti-nutrients because they form insoluble complexes with minerals such as zinc, calcium, magnesium, and iron. This means they chemically bind to these minerals found in food, making them unavailable in your metabolic pathways. In their cookbook, Nourishing Traditions, authors Sally Fallon and Mary Enig explain that the ancient Incans soaked pumpkin seeds in salt water and then placed them in the sun to dry. A salt water soak for 8 to 12 hours is a method of dissolving phytates. Native societies had this knowledge, but the information has been lost, particularly in the commercial food industry. Fermentation naturally dissolves phytates, making sourdough a healthy choice. Phytates are in the grain kernel, and when kernels sprout, phytates are dissolved, making sprouted grain bread another important option. Spelt grain, also called hulled grain, is naturally low in phytates. In Mesopotamia, hulled wheat was called emmer wheat. Emmer wheat is the most abundant wheat species at Mesopotamian archaeological sites. Soy-funded studies conducted by Dr. Joseph Rackus showed that phytates cannot be removed from soy. At this point, I'd like to cover nanoparticles used as food additives and in food packaging. Scientists at the Mewar University in India have written a March 2020 article titled "Use of Nanomaterials in Food Science" that was published in a scientific journal called Nature Public Health Emergency Collection. In their paper, the authors explain that there are two forms of nano-food applications, food additives, or nano-inside, and food packaging, or nano-outside. They explain that nanoparticles are used to modify color, flavor, nutrition, and shelf life. Scientists at the School of Public Health in Nanjing, China, wrote a November 2019 article titled "The Toxicity of Metallic Nanoparticles on Liver, the Subcellular Damages, Mechanisms, and Outcomes," published in a scientific journal called International Journal of Nanomedicine. The authors refer to metallic nanoparticles as MNPs and explain that they are used to as additives in food, including nanocopper, nanosilver, nanonickel, nanotitanium oxide, and nanozinc oxide. The authors write, MNPs can enter the body in various ways, for example, through inhalation, the gastrointestinal tract, or skin, and circulate via the blood or lymphatic system, eventually accumulating in various organs. The liver is extremely important, as it has been shown to accumulate MNPs at much higher quantities compared with other organs. Our listeners can find that article by Googling the title. In 2004, an environmental toxicologist named Dr. Eva Oberdorster presented a paper at the American Chemical Society National Meeting about brain damage in fish caused by nanoparticles. She exposed 9 largemouth bass to water containing nanoparticles at concentrations of 500 parts per billion. The concentration level is comparable to pollutants in levels commonly found in port waters. After 48 hours, she found severe brain damage in brain tissue in the form of lipid peroxidation, a condition leading to the destruction of cell membranes, which has been linked in humans to illnesses such as Alzheimer's disease. She has also found chemical markers in the liver indicating inflammation. An article about Eva's research has been published by the ETC Group, a Canadian watchdog organization. The article is titled "Nanos Troubled Waters." A PDF version can be found by Googling "Nanos Troubled Waters, Dr. Eva Oberdorster, ETC Group." The spelling of Dr. Oberdorster's name is in the notes. And that's the conclusion.
Wow. Well, you put a lot on the table here to discuss. You know, a lot of people, including me, I don't know about you, Mary Jo, but have allergies, and we have to be extremely, extremely careful about what we eat or what our food is cooked on, what kind of oil. For instance, if shrimp has been used in a pan, and they put oil in it, and then they take out the chicken, out the shrimp, and put the chicken in and cook it, and I eat it, I would be in the hospital, and I have been, because even at that level, it can absolutely assault you. And so when we're talking about other things that they're experimenting with, it's going to have to be absolutely clear about what is in what we're eating and how it's made up, even how it's cooked. And this kind of information, I would think, would be extremely hard to get.
I think it would, too. I definitely think they won't give it up very easily.
No, not at all, for those reasons that people are being very careful and they're opening up something here that could very well be quite dangerous. Even when you read packaging, and supposedly the law says that everything that is in the product, whatever that product is, you have to have it on the label. But I don't know about you, but half of the names are like 18 letters or more long, and I can't even pronounce them, and I absolutely have no idea at all about what it is.
You're right. The Wisconsin actually had a big lawsuit over labeling of milk and whether hormones were in the milk, and the farmers in Wisconsin won in court. But the supermarkets in Wisconsin have some branches in Illinois where they do not permit the labeling of whether there's hormone in the milk in Illinois. But since the farmers won the legal battle in Wisconsin, they have to label the milk whether it's got hormones or not. But they had to go to court over that. They had to
Right. So in other words, the different states. It could be the same product, but in different states, it's what's in it and what you can find that's in the product. It depends on the state. Now that's upsetting. That is upsetting. I wish it were national, so that when something is passed, it goes to all 50 states, not just one, because you can imagine how long it's going to take for each of the states to come to a reasonable settlement of how they're going to express what's in the food.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the job of the FDA, but they're not doing their job. I mean, there's some really horrifying stories about what the FDA has done to almost help these you know, various groups keep their really bad content in our food supply.
Right. You just mentioned a major chocolate company. And I happen to like chocolate, as many people do. And I'm wondering, since they said that they were using those technologies, I wonder what's in the chocolate. If it's the same chocolate that I enjoyed 5 years ago, if it's not the same ingredients, what is in it?
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. This is a toboggan ride to hell. As far as trying to discern what we're putting in ourselves, in our bodies. And, you know, you are what you eat. I mean, that's an old adage, but it's absolutely true. You have to be so careful about what you're putting in your body.
Yes, I agree.
And here we go here with some new technologies that, unless I'm mistaken, are already at this point starting to mask what is really in the food.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sounds really upsetting to me. It's very upsetting. You know, when I first got wind of 3D printing, I was reading an article about desserts, and they were going to have incredibly beautiful, sculptured almost, different kinds of treats, pastry and so forth, that looked like a chef had been working a whole hour on it, when actually it was being quickly printed. And I thought, well, that's wonderful, because the creative part of the chefs could be expressed, and beautiful products could be turned out, and at a reasonable cost that people could afford. For instance, a wedding cake or a birthday cake or something like that. may have amazing details in the presentation that would make it so special and so delightful. And so I originally was thinking, well, this is a very wonderful new technology, and I could see it being enjoyed, and hopefully it will be. But at the same time, what you're saying is there's a whole other side of it. And then we started getting into beetles, and we started getting into flour. Mm-hmm. And then, factor came up as I was expressing.
I don't think I'm sure you feel the same. Well,
I
found that woman's work, that Susanna Suarez, if I hadn't found her Insects au Gratin project, I don't think I would have continued to look for, you know, more information. And then this whole thing about mealworms and the approval in Europe, and then our FDA sort of being very casual about, you know, well, if they're raised specifically for food, it's okay. You know, it's the whole subject is so creepy.
It is. It's very shadowy. It just, even when you were expressing what your research showed, it sounds shadowy. It sounds like you could hide a million things in some of this technology, or what's the ingredients, and who's going to know? And of course, the bottom line on all the corporations is how much is it's going to cost, and how can we reduce costs? How can we make this the bottom line, always the bottom line? So here we go again from what you were researching, that some of these products, including bug flour, probably could be a lot cheaper.
Well, they always say the bugs use less water than the animals. The bugs don't require as much water. They always say that in these articles.
Right, right. And that was expressed a couple of times in your research. So that's definitely a major factor that they're putting on the table and saying, well, because of this, it uses less water. It takes a lot quicker, shorter time to prepare for something like this. But the bottom line is, look what it is. Look what you're eating, you know, and what you're putting in your stomach. And boy, the red lights are going off on this. It just is.
They're trying to persuade the public by, you know, already they're starting in these scientific studies saying that, oh, the protein fortifies, you know, it'll improve the protein content in bread, it'll improve the protein content in muffins. You know, that is just so strange and so weird. You know, because I did add that whole thing that we covered in, I think it was February 2020, one of our first podcasts, that it's comparable to meat protein, and meat protein isn't even really all that efficient when it comes down to the essential amino acids in the protein. The most efficient are eggs and dairy. So, you know, that is... Here they're trying to imitate the content in meat when meat really isn't, it doesn't have all the essential amino acids. It's a dead end, really. This is a dead end, and it's really, really icky.
I was reading that Bill Gates and that whole group was going very heavily into investing millions and millions of dollars into taking meat and chicken cells and growing them in a laboratory on such a level that it eventually would be profitable. And this is a very different technology that is saying it originally was meat. It was real chicken and it was real beef. But they're multiplying the cells somehow in the laboratories, and they're turning out something that could be likened to a real chicken and that you would normally buy, and also real beef that you would normally buy and put in your food. But this is dealing with a technology replacing what we've always had, and you just wonder how many safety nets there are, how many agencies are really checking deeply into this on all the levels you were talking about, the levels of health, are there any negative qualities to this kinds of technology? Because again, it's replacing what we've for many, many hundreds of years, thousands of years, were used to, and now this other technologies are coming in, 3D printing and also cell manipulation to form a different kind of product. This has got to be closely watched.
The thing you just mentioned with the cells, that's how they made the steak on the International Space Station. They took the beef cells and they put them in the 3D printer. And they kept laying down the beef cells until they had a piece of steak. So that is maybe part of what you're talking about, the
cells. Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how interesting is that? And you wonder, is refrigeration needed for, I would think the answer is yes, although I don't know, as these products are being developed and growing, what are the parameters of all that? And what are the safety conditions for all that? But when it comes to the bug, flower, and all that, I'm out of there. I'm out of here. I'm not gonna go near that. I just think there's too many things that could go wrong with that. And again, you know, this, as you know, has to be tested years to see what the ramifications really are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it sounds to me as though some of this is already on the market, right? Some of the products.
It is. They started out in Europe, in Belgium and the Netherlands, were two countries that are considered European Union states, and they went ahead. They went for it right very early, and in 2015 they gave them permission to sell it as human food, as in a category they call novel food. And
yes,
then
that's right.
Just this year, they said it doesn't have to be in that category anymore. That it's now approved, and there are 27 nation states in the European Union. So now the entire European Safety Food Agency, which is for the entire European Union, has approval to sell this as food in all 27 European nation states in the European Union.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's how they do it. You know, this European Food Safety Agency is like our FDA. It's the governmental safety agency for all of those nation states. So now they're okay. They get the green light for as of May 2021. This year.
Mary Jo, just a question. Would you have any idea why this technology was breaking there in Europe as opposed to here in the United States or Canada? What would be the reason that it was there that this is starting to be put on the market?
That's a really, really good, I don't know. I don't remember seeing any. I was just surprised that Belgium and the Netherlands were so gung-ho on, you know, putting it through very, very early. It could be that just,
me too.
The companies that wanted to sell it were located there. That could be simply the explanation that they, because what they had to do is make an application and for the European Food Safety Agency. They had to apply in 2015 to become a novel food, which they were given permission to do. And then later on, as I said, it's just this May of this year, they were waiting. They were really, really anxiously waiting for this recent approval because that, you know, opened up so many more possibilities for selling the mealworm as human food in all through the European Union.
Wow.
So it was
there's
a handful of companies. It was a handful of companies in the beginning in 2015 that got everything started.
Actually, right.
They applied for this you know, permission to sell this as human food, and that's the first step. They were given novel status, and so then later the bigger approval was granted, but it took a few years. It took a few years.
You know, there's an expression, I'm quoting here, who's checking the checkers?
Yeah.
And it's a very simple expression, but it really goes deep. Who's checking the checkers? And what's the quality of the checking? How deep does it go? And you would like to think that they can't be bought, that they will tell the absolute 1,000% truth on the findings. But call me skeptical, but I just think that this is going a little fast and a little bit, shall we say, shaded or guarded about the realities of what all this is. We're getting the news now that they actually already started. I mean, something is not quite right here. That's my feeling.
You know, they're very blunt in these articles about the use of 3D printing is to change the shape or the appearance, or you know, to create, as you were describing previously, they are blunt about that. They say that they're using 3D printing to for consumer acceptance. They actually come out and say that they understand that insect protein is something that would probably not be accepted, so that is why they're using 3D printing. They're actually stating that in these articles. They're blunt. They just, this is why they're actually putting it through as a paste and creating all these different shapes so that consumers will accept it. To me, it's like they're fooling people. They're going to put it into a different shape and maybe hope that they won't ask any questions, you know.
Right. I would say you're right on the money on that one. I think that is true. And here we go again. It's we have to be so careful as consumers about what we're buying and what we are sure is in the product. And there's a lot of pitfalls here as we go very deep in this new technology. Really
you
are.
No, I was
and,
thinking
you know,
that. Oh, go ahead.
Just that if they had a product, a food product that was steak, say it was a steak or a hamburger that was totally vegetarian, I don't think most people would have a problem with trying that. And if it really tasted and looked and felt like the real thing and it was healthy, I wouldn't have a problem with buying more of that product. But when it comes to things like flour being made with insects, and I saw a photo in your data that showed what those worms look like. And let me say to our listening audience, it wasn't pretty. It was not pretty at all.
They're pretty awful.
I lost my appetite. Mary Jo, I was going to have a little snack. I've lost my appetite after our podcast is over. I am not going to my kitchen now because I saw your photograph and I can't get it out of my mind.
I haven't been able to stop thinking about the subject either. You know, I was reminded that, you know, remember when we did our three-part series on nanotechnology? In one of those segments, I mentioned that Toms of Maine, the toothpaste company, they were so concerned that their customers were going to be worried that there were nanoparticles in the toothpaste, because there is a nanoparticle, titanium oxide, that's used as a whitener, that Toms of Maine made an announcement to say there are no nanoparticles in our toothpaste. So it may be that food companies are going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to say there's no insect flour in our bread. There's no insect flour in our muffins.
Right.
Because it's so gross. I mean, it's just going to make people want to stop buying unless they absolutely know for sure. I think everybody's going to have your same reaction. They're going to have that same feeling that, oh, you know, I don't know about this. I'm not sure.
I don't want to eat it. I don't want my children to eat it either. I want to stay away from that because this is strange stuff, and mm-hmm. I can get along without it. So that, and because it's very inexpensive, according to the data we've got so far, that mm-hmm. means they're going to really try to get this through. And to use it
yeah,
a
they're
lot.
Gonna
There's
look
no
at the
question.
Money. They're gonna make the financial part of it the most important part. They're gonna look at that.
Absolutely. That is exactly what's going to happen. And here we go again. The consumer is on the other end of this, trying to stay healthy, trying to eat well, trying to keep our weight in reasonable, and we don't need some of the bugs in our flour to try to absorb that and hope that it's going to be okay. I don't want to feel like I don't really know how it's going to affect me now or in the near future. Mm-hmm. So if it's it has to be on a label and it has to be expressed, like you just said, so simply that anyone can understand that what's in and what's not in, say the flour, for instance, mm-hmm. and not have a long term with 20 letters that nobody can pronounce and nobody knows what it really means, especially if it means, yes, there's insects, the powder is in our product. So I hope that whoever is the regulators are looking very, very closely at this right now. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we're in for a toboggan ride to hell and back because there's a lot of danger. I see a lot of dangers here from what they've done so far.
Yes.
It's just not something that I would look forward to at all. And I think most consumers would not, if they knew what was in it, would say, not in a million years am I going to buy that product.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the whole story right there. Let me say to the listeners that if you have any questions or comments for either Mary Jo or myself, we'd be happy to take them. I gave you my email address already, but let me give you that one more time. And if it's directed to Mary Jo, I'll make very sure that she gets it. So my email address is nicknyny1. And again, it's the numeral one, not the O-N-E, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1@gmail.com. Just want to get that in before the time is flying. We're almost out of our hour already. It goes by so fast.
How much time do we have?
Around 7
Hercules,
and a half.
How we doing?
We're on 7.5 minutes. We have 6 minutes until they start bugging us.
Okay.
Mary Jo, do you have any final comments or thoughts you want to share with our listeners here?
I have a story to tell. I was in the 90s in New York. I was a Macintosh operator in commercial art studios, and I worked for I was a freelance person working for one of the largest public relations companies in the world called Burson Marsteller, and they had Monsanto as a client. Years after I worked there on the Macintosh, the CEO got into a lot of trouble because in a speech he gave, he said that he didn't think Monsanto needed to be concerned about what GMOs were going to do to anyone's health.
Ouch.
And that really, really got people mad. So what did they do? They had to get Burson Marsteller, this huge PR firm, to clean that up. And the advice they gave Monsanto was, don't say anything ever again about
mm-hmm.
GMOs. That was the advice that was given.
Wow. Just stay away from the subject totally.
Yeah, just don't talk about it. So be quiet. Mm. Keep it a secret. And that is the history of GMOs, and that may be exactly what's going to happen with insect flour.
Yeah, yep. I think you've got a good point there. Absolutely.
They do it
Don't
with other
tell
things,
them.
Too. Like they change the name of aspartame to another, they give it another name and they put it on.
Same product, you know, different name. Same product, different name.
Just like you said, yeah.
Yep.
So there's a lot of tricks that they, if they want to get a particular ingredient in the food, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And they've got enough people, high-paid people, and enough lawyers to run it past and get it through, even though it's not really honest. It's kind of a little bit honest, maybe a little bit not. And how much can we get away with? This goes on all the time, and it's really sad. I've seen examples of that also, and I'm always, I have to say, shocked and saddened that that seems to be the state of the affairs right now, is the truth. To get a company that's really truthful and that you can trust is like finding gold. I look for that in products. I look for products, not only for food, but all kinds of products that you can trust, that they've got a good track record, that people who have bought them have said, you know what, I would buy it again because the service is great. They're truthful. They'll back up their product. I mean, when you hear that, you're saying, I'm going to invest my money in that particular product. No problem. But I'll tell you, those companies are few and far between.
Well, that's why I added Whole Foods to the topic next month, because in 2018 they voluntarily labeled 11,000 products non-GMO.
Wow.
They did it on their own. It was their own initiative for their customers.
See, that speaks very well. That I really looking forward to the next issue or next podcast next month because of what you're going to be focusing on. That really does interest me quite a bit.
Yeah,
and,
because they
I
did
didn't
it
realize
on their own.
That. That speaks well for them. That just speaks very well. And that's what we're looking for.
It is. And that's what we'll have to look for in the future.
Right. Well, I guess we've hit the time then, so I guess we're going to do our closing. Mary Jo, again, your deep research, so appreciated. Thank you so much for doing this.
You know,
this
I just want to thank you and Hercules, because this show gives me an opportunity to do the research and to talk about subjects. All my life, I have rarely found people that, to be honest, that are really all that interested in some of these subjects, and this has been such a wonderful opportunity for me to really dig in and find this information.
You know, I got to tell you, I wish that programs like ours are much wider circulated on the major networks, and where a lot more people by the tens of millions can really get this information, because it's really vital information. And all of the podcasts that we've done have points that people should really know about, and the more the better. And so it's really almost a service to the community to say, this is what you need to look for, this is what we found out. So I'm very happy, Mary Jo, to be working with you on this incredible journey that we've started. And I certainly look forward to the future of our programming, very much so.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for your amazing energy and your deep research on these issues. They're really excellent. So, all right, with that, then we're going to do our closing. Here we go. This is Nick Curto.
And Mary Jo Fahey for Connecting the Dots, wishing you all an enlightening journey.
As you connect the dots to seek truth.
Till next time, keep informed, stay healthy, and safe.
And be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye for now. Much love to all. Much love.
And thank you, Nick, and thank you, Mary Jo. That was an awesome show. In the minute that we have left, we're going to play The Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you. Bye now.
Absolute pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Nick, are you still there?
Yes.
he danced to the music of her cries. Lady of Moon.